You've told us a tale today where the beginnings of your time at the radio station KPFA as a volunteer were centered in your memory around the day that this.
This is Laura Kuhn of the John Cage Trust. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra, creative and community radio in Greene and Columbia counties.
Oh my God, honey, I just heard some terrible news. The radio station's going off the air.
Going off the air? How will I listen to my samba music? A 1, 2, 3, back, a 3, 2, 1, back, to the side, to the left.
Honey, you're an excellent samba dancer, but I think this is it for them.
Oh, no, I just went to their website, wgxc.org. You can donate monthly, did you know that?
Yeah, you can make one of those one-time donations, but you know what I'm into? Monthly sustaining support.
Oh, honey, you're very sustaining, especially when we go and have that delicious spring water in Hudson and the environs.
All right, don't get so frisky, honey. Donate monthly. Choose your amount from the drop-down menu on the old website there, or donate by check. Did you know I can give them my stock donations?
Oh, honey, give them some of that worthless Bitcoin that those children who were sleeping in their cars, they told us to buy the Bitcoin. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I got some of that Bitcoin, but I got something better, cold hard cash. Donate right now to the best radio station in the land.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when NSI delivers their spin on ambient sounds. Living by Lanterns draws inspiration from Sun Ra, and Ramin Djawadi scores with an epic soundtrack. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Survival, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survival shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephen Merritt of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. New York State of Politics reports that former President Donald Trump's lawyers filed an Article 78 lawsuit accusing trial judge Arthur Engoron of repeatedly abusing his authority. Engoron is the judge in the New York Attorney General's business fraud lawsuit against Trump, which is currently scheduled to begin October 2nd. But this lawsuit may delay that, depending on how Justice David Friedman rules in a decision he will announce the week of September 25th. Trump's lawyers' allegations against Engoron include the judge's refusal to grant a request for a 3-week trial delay, which he ruled as, and I quote, completely without merit, end quote, and because he has yet to comply with the June appeals court order to determine which claims in the fraud lawsuit are barred by the statute of limitations. Oral arguments in the case are scheduled for September 22nd about requests from James's office and Trump's lawyers. James did not comment on the new Trump lawsuit, just saying, and I quote, "We are confident in our case and we will be ready for trial," end quote. In many of his lawsuits, Trump has also tried to remove judges and delay trials. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Patrick Tyne reports for the Times Union that some people are raising concerns about pedestrian safety on Route 20 near the Lebanon Valley Speedway after a Massachusetts couple in their 70s was struck and killed in the crosswalk near the track on September 9th. State police have not cited the so far unnamed driver of a 2019 Subaru who hit the couple, and they say she's been cooperating with their investigation. James Close remembers 2018 when he was traveling west on Route 20, and I quote, "The next thing I know, thank God I was paying attention, there were these people walking across the road, and I was a microsecond away from hitting them," end quote. He slammed on his brakes and, he said, and I quote, "They didn't even seem to react. I don't think they even knew this car was bearing down on them," end quote. There is pedestrian crossing signs and flashing lights on both sides of the crosswalk. New Lebanon Town Supervisor Trista Hodling said that she has not heard about problems at the location, but has heard from residents about other portions of the road. Hodling said, and I quote, "We have a lot of concerns raised about that section of Route 20 right before the speedway near Walter B. Howard Elementary School, pretty consistently, at least over the last 3.5 years. I have heard concerns about how fast cars go," end quote. In February, the Department of Transportation rejected a request to lower the speed limit from 45 in front of the Walter B. Howard Elementary School on Route 20 and to set up a school speed zone around New Lebanon Junior Senior High School. The DOT released a statement after the couple's death near the speedway saying, and I quote, "Safety is always the top priority for the New York State Department of Transportation. Given that this tragic incident in the town of New Lebanon remains the subject of an ongoing law enforcement investigation, we cannot comment further at this time," end quote. And Lebanon Valley Speedway owner Howard Commander did not respond to requests for comment. Read more about this story in the Times Union. James Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media, the city of Hudson is considering a proposal to allow alcohol sales for special events in not just the city's waterfront park, but also the public square, Promenade Hill Park, and other events on city streets or city-owned properties. Mayoral aide Michael Hoffman said, and I quote, "The way that the law is composed right now, the only way for someone to hold an event on public property and serve alcohol is to hold the event at the waterfront park. What we have done and what we have seen is that there's interest in holding events in other public spaces around the city. We informally have been allowing it for groups that approach us and gave us a plan. We worked with the police department to allow it in certain instances. We had so many requests, we figured we might as well incorporate them into the law," end quote. The proposed amendment to Hudson law will sit on the Common Council desk for 30 days and then move to the legal committee in October. Hoffman said, and I quote, "The potential change enables events such as Oktoberfest to happen," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Chile 1973, the other September 11th. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On September 11th, 2001, terror struck the United States. 3,000 people were killed that day. Many more died afterwards from the pollution at Ground Zero in New York and in the two long wars that followed in Afghanistan and Iraq. At the time, the Democracy Now! NewsHour broadcast from the garret of an old firehouse in Manhattan's Chinatown, just blocks from the World Trade Center. On the program that morning, just as the plane struck the two towers, we were discussing the link between terrorism and September 11th, 1973. That was the day the democratically elected government of Chile was violently overthrown in a U.S.-backed coup d'etat. President Salvador Allende died in La Moneda, the presidential palace, that day, as General Augusto Pinochet rose to power. Allende was elected in 1970, pledging to nationalize critical sectors of the Chilean economy, like copper mining, long controlled by foreign multinational corporations, while most Chileans were impoverished. Pinochet's brutal dictatorship lasted 17 years. Many of Allende's supporters were arrested, tortured, and imprisoned. At least 3,000 were killed or disappeared. Tens of thousands were tortured. The United States government fully supported the coup and the brutal dictatorship that followed. President Nixon's national security adviser, Henry Kissinger, said to aides in a meeting on June 27, 1970, several months before the Chilean election, "I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its own people." Kissinger predicted correctly. Chileans would elect Allende, a democratic socialist. After Allende won, Kissinger and President Richard Nixon funded and fomented discord, destabilization, and chaos in Chile. Much of what's publicly known about the U.S. role in the coup comes from declassified documents pried out of the CIA and other agencies by the National Security Archives based in Washington, D.C.
On the 12th of September, 1973, Henry Kissinger called together a special interagency committee known as the WASAG, the Washington Special Action Group. And literally within 24 hours of the coup, he was in discussion with these interagency representatives on how to help the Pinochet regime consolidate.
That's Peter Kornbluh, head of the Archives Chile Documentation Project, speaking on Democracy Now!
Even as people were being killed and their bodies dumped in the street and rounded up and put into a concentration camp at the stadium and bodies floating in the Mapocho River here in Santiago, Kissinger convened this committee. And we have the declassified memorandum of conversation. And, you know, actually, the officials there just started joking about the coup.
But for Chileans, the coup was no joke. Ariel Dorfman, 31 years old at the time, was a cultural advisor to President Allende. He was one of the last to see Allende alive.
That I was supposed to be at La Moneda that morning and dawn. I was supposed to have slept the night there because that was one of the ideas. You had turns where you're supposed to receive the news, whether there was a coup happening. And I switched places with one of my dear friends, who in fact was captured at La Moneda on the 11th. He was tortured and then executed. So I'm in a sense survivor because of him, or at least so I felt all these years.
When asked about the U.S. sponsorship of the deadly coup, Dorfman was emphatic.
Kissinger is a war criminal. We all know that. How do a counterinsurgency against a people who are armed with the vote, who are armed with their consciousness, who are armed with their desire for liberation and love for one another and solidarity? And so he understood that he had to destroy Allende because if Allende's example would have spread through Latin America, then U.S. interests would have been terribly, compromised.
Pinochet's mass murder reached beyond Chile's borders to the heart of U.S. power. On September 21, 1976, one of Allende's former ministers, Ambassador Orlando Letelier, was assassinated in a car bombing in Washington, D.C. His assistant, 25-year-old Ronnie Moffitt, was killed as well. Despite almost two decades of dictatorship, Chile survived the Pinochet era, committed to democracy. While still divided, the Chilean people have sent progressive candidates to office, from former President Michelle Bachelet. She and her mother were tortured under Pinochet. Her father, an Air Force officer, was tortured to death. Chile's current president is 37-year-old Gabriel Boric. He was a leader of Chile's student protests over a decade ago and won a surprise victory over a right-wing opponent last year. President Boric is reportedly planning a side trip to Washington, D.C. while attending the United Nations General Assembly this month to visit the scene of Orlando Letelier's assassination. Terrorism is a crime, whether committed on September 11, 2001, or in Chile on September 11, 1973 and beyond. Henry Kissinger, now 100 years old, should not be hailed as an elder statesman, but should face prosecution for war crimes and crimes against humanity. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a partly sunny Saturday with a temperature high near 71 degrees and a northwest wind at 14 to 17 miles an hour with gusts as high as 26 miles an hour. Tonight, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 52 degrees and a northwest wind at 6 to 14 miles per hour. And on Sunday, mostly clear with a temperature high near 75 degrees and a southwest wind at around 6 miles per hour. And Sunday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 56 degrees. And on Monday, a chance of showers, partly sunny with a temperature high near 71 degrees. And that's your weekend weather report from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the People of the Waters That Are Never Still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Tonight, what height?
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes, when NSI delivers their spin on ambient sounds. Living by Lanterns draws inspiration from Sun Ra. And Ramin Djawadi scores with an epic soundtrack. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM. Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Good evening, Mr. Apolloni. I'm the sergeant. This is Officer Doney. I read your statement, and I have a few questions.
Look, I already told you guys everything.
Yeah, well, it's not adding up.
I know.
I want the truth.
Fine.
Buddy, I got a dead body on my hands, and I need answers.
You won't believe it if I told you.
Try me.
I will.
You wouldn't believe some of the things I've believed.
Okay. Okay, then. I was out at the Little League Diamond at Hyde Park. I was alone. Tossing the ball up in the air to practice my catches, you know? I threw myself a high popper, wide to my right, so I could try a diver. And I ended up right by the third base, with a face full of dirt. As I looked up, I saw a big, hairy foot, standing on third base. The dust cloud settled, and there it was. A chimpanzee, staring right down at me. He was wearing some sort of loincloth, smiling. And then he used sign language to communicate to me. "Gonna kill your wife," he said. I closed my eyes, rubbed the dirt from them, and when I reopened them, he was gone. He was gone.
No chimp.
No chimp. I assumed I just imagined it. Maybe I had knocked myself loopy from landing so hard.
Did you make the catch?
No. But I don't think I did imagine it, because when I got home, I found my wife all over the house, torn apart, savagely. Limbs in every room, heart ripped out, head was smushed. I called 911, but I lost her on the way to the hospital. And I know that chimp had something to do with this. I know how crazy this all sounds.
And you expect me to believe that shit?
No.
Well, I do.
Why?
I know you're telling the truth. I'm just messing with you.
What?
Officer Doney, can you leave me and the suspect alone for a little while?
Okay, Sarge.
Oh, and tell him out front to hold my calls. I'll be slinking through a secret corridor that leads to an old subterranean lair.
Okay. Bye.
Mr. Apolloni, follow me, please.
The sergeant then peeled back a large square of rug under the interrogation table and lifted a trap door. He led me down a dark stone staircase that led deep underground. He lit candles on the wall as he went, incrementally exposing every crack in this ancient crumbling catacomb. We descended until we reached a hallway where salty crystal icicles hung from a head-high ceiling. Up ahead, there seemed to be a fire already burning. When he led me to the final room, I discovered the firelight was coming from a birthday cake. On it were dozens of burning candles that illuminated a beehive-shaped monolith behind it, lined with human skulls. What is this place?
Yeah. It was the chimp, all right. I've been trying to stop that damn thing for years, to no avail. These here are the skulls of its victims. I collect them down here in hopes that they find peace. I will add your wife's skull here next.
Cool.
I know you will find this hard to believe.
Try me.
That's not just a chimp that you saw, but the ghost of a chimp.
What?
A chimp named Mark Twain.
What?
You see, many years ago, that chimp was being kept as a pet. For its 10th birthday, its keepers threw a huge birthday party for it at the Diamond at Hyde Park.
What?
Everything was going fine. There were balloons. But when they thrust the birthday cake in Mark Twain's face so he could blow out the candles, the little flickering flames startled the chimp and it went berserk. It smashed the cake to the ground, but that wasn't the worst of it. It also maimed and murdered. 30 people were at that party. None were left unscathed. If they weren't killed, they at least had some part of them ripped off. The SPCA arrived at the scene and shot that chimp, and as he lay dying, he signed the words, "Gonna come back as a ghost and kill people."
Worst birthday ever.
Every year I come down here and put another candle on this cake. There's no way to catch this monkey, so I do what I can to try to appease his raging spirit. So far, nothing has helped.
Hey, how do you know so much about this Mark Twain?
The answer to that is the zipper.
The zipper?
See this zipper around my wrist? Go ahead. Unzip it.
The sergeant had pulled up his sleeve to show me a zipper that circled his wrist. And as I unzipped it, hair sprouted from underneath as I went, until the most uncanny revelation. What? You have a chimp hand under this fake human hand.
I know so much about Mark Twain because I was there at that party. Some say I was even his owner. If you weren't lucky enough to die at that party, you lost a limb or a nose or private, and in its place miraculously grew the body part of a chimpanzee. I've tried cutting it off, and it just grows right back. A permanent reminder of our failings in trying to tame the wild and nature, and now our humanity is forever held in captivity to that moment. But I'll never quit trying to stop him. I feel too responsible.
The sergeant then took out his human eye and wiped a tear from the chimp eyeball behind it. It was sad. "Well, Sergeant," I said, "I'm ready to join you in this fight to avenge the death of my Janine." I held out my hand, and the sergeant shook it with his big, hairy paw.
"Go ahead. You're free to go. And don't tell anyone about this."
So I left that ghastly cellar of death. But before I did, I turned around. "Hey, Sarge. It's gonna be okay. We have each other." I may have lost a wife that night, but I gained a friend.
Oh,
Wayfarm's Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wayfarm's 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Accra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wayfarm's International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wayfarm's Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wayfarm.org.
Dozens of climate activists rallied outside the museum. Nearly 100 climate activists rallied at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City on September 15th to call for the removal of MoMA's board chair, Marie Jose Kravis, because of her and her husband's, Henry Kravis's, ties to the fossil fuel industry. Henry Kravis, whose net worth is around $8 billion, is co-chief executive of KKR, one of the world's five largest private equity firms. It is heavily invested in fossil fuels in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Europe, and the Middle East. KKR is behind the coastal gasoline pipeline being built through Wet'suwet'en territory in Canada. We start off by hearing from some of the hereditary chiefs from Canada. We later hear, among others, from Ronnie Zahavi Bruner of Planet Over Profits and Michael Kink, A Strong Economy for All. We then hear again from Ronnie after several dozen activists occupied and shut down MoMA for hours.
MoMA, drop Kravis! MoMA, drop Kravis!
Shut it down!
We don't get it!
Shut it down!
We're here today at Wet'suwet'en, Gidimden. These people are killing our water. We're here to tell you we're alive, we're healthy, but they're killing our way of life. So they could get rich, and they would leave us behind to die. We got children, we got grandchildren that depend on the water, food, the fish, and the wildlife. And they don't care about that. We're here to tell you that. KKR, they are dangerous people. They come with guns, point guns at women, at children in Canada.
Museum of Modern Art
and it bothers me. Why is it modern to kill our people, to kill our water, to kill our land, to kill your future? When they get funded by KKR, over $500 billion that company has, and yet they sponsor this building. Kravitz White sits on the board here. You need to have those types of people removed. It's not art to kill people. It's not art to kill water. It's not art to kill the people. The Museum of Modern Art has to remove these people because KKR, in any way, shape, or form, affects every one of you. In Canada, we're losing our democracy. We are the government of our land. We are the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs. We do have 22,000 square kilometers of land that we have jurisdiction of. And yet, these companies such as KKR, the World Bank of Canada, who support MoMA, must be held accountable. So everybody must be held accountable. Those who support them on the board, those who enter these buildings, must use your voices and say, when you're wrong, you're wrong. But when you do the right thing, such as coming together, as Chief Watt said, look after the women, the children, and the future of this planet. That's why you're here. Make your voice heard. Make them understand and hold them accountable.
Here to deliver a letter to the board of directors. The lady that is on the board of directors is the wife of the person that is responsible for killing our water, killing our culture, killing our way of life. They are responsible for that. She's on the board of directors, and we want her removed because there's lots of art in here that is good for the general people, but not for somebody that kills water, kills wildlife, and kills a way of life. That's not right. They have to be accountable.
Yeah. Oh, oh! Coastal Gasling's got to go! Hey, hey! Oh, oh!
Of modern art!
Of modern art!
Museum of Modern Art.
What money?
Right now, pieces from his personal collection are in the acclaimed Ed Ruscha exhibit. Ed Ruscha is a soothsayer. He painted this burning gas station 50 years ago, envisioning a future when consumption and capitalism would be killing all of us. But Henry Kravis is a climate criminal. Ford has made billions of dollars attacking communities, attacking workers. They put all the Toys R Us workers out of a job and stole their severance money. Their fur picks your pocket every single day. And they control $500 trillion in investment money from pension funds that regular working people contribute in their day-to-day life. Their energy portfolio is $25 billion, and 78% of it is invested in fossil fuels and fossil fuel infrastructure. KKR is 78% dirty and 100% deadly when it comes to energy and our climate future. The board chair of the Museum of Modern Art is Mary Jose Kravis, Henry Kravis's wife. MoMA was built on oil money, the Rockefellers, on top of the Basses, on top of the Hesses, and now the Wall Street financiers that control the future are piling their dead fossil fuel blood money into the art in this museum. Those hereditary tribal chiefs, the members from the frontline communities in the Gulf, from Louisiana and Texas, call on the Museum of Modern Art, get rid of Mary Jose Kravis as their board chair, to eliminate ties to the Kravis family in their heart, and to join us in the streets to fight for a future. We need clean air, not another billionaire.
It is now 8 p.m. We are inside the Museum of Modern Art. We have been occupying the Museum of Modern Art for about 5 hours now. This museum is ours, and we are not going anywhere.
That's right.
If the MoMA wants us out, there is one thing that they can do. They can get Glenn Lowry, the director of the MoMA, on a public call with us and hereditary Wet'suwet'en chiefs who are here in New York right now to set up a meeting between him and the chiefs that will take place in the next 48 hours. It is time for the MoMA to hear from the people who are actually affected by KKR. The MoMA has ignored them for way too long. These are the people that are hurt by the investments of the people that are giving money to the MoMA. They don't listen to our demands. We will stay here as long as it takes. We are not going to move.
This is Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
In the whole, words spoken evenly because every word has value. Nothing is boring. 15, okay, 15, but make it fast. Franks repeated on the diagonal. The taconic diner in faded yellow. Now other people are in the room. The inner voice weaves through tall grass and subways. Somewhere in the book of disquiet is a failure to believe. Detail aggravates by what it promises and doesn't deliver. Clouds for clouds. The shutter stuck, Ed. They're scavenging red wires. No, they're dried chilies. I should take a picture. Luviola, Rothstein, Epstein. Where did she find all these words? Golden, lion, tamarind, monkeys. The tower outside Prospect Park Station has a rusty splotch where the clock used to be. I try to remember to pet the cat before I leave. One time a driver cursed me.
on the beach at Chappaquiddick. For dinner, and I'm thinking Russ and Daughters, take the F train to Kew Gardens, F Murray, Mozart, tedious, it might take a while, some want to see all guns banned, to them I say, get real, this is America. I went right up to a sign and looked behind it, a green sweater on a white chair, sunflowers on a pillow, clothes in a sink. I never take pictures of strangers. They'll get mad.
That was 36 Ways of Looking at a Memory from Sky Furrows, which is Columbia County poet Karen Schomer with Capital Region musicians Eric Hardiman, Mike Griffin, and Phil Donnelly. Their self-titled album Sky Furrows came out in October 2020. Next, we head up to Palinville to tune in Florist. From their 2022 album titled Florist, this is Red Bird Part 2 Morning.
All the same. singing still, wake up in the morning so the morning comes. Where is it gone now? Where is it gone? I've seen photos of the living room. Didn't have a lot, and the house needed some work done, so you did it all yourself for a feeling, a family, a place we could call home. Home. So comes another year now. Did you ever even think we'd both be back here looking out at this beautiful place, seeing nothing but the glow of memory and a boy in our vision where she would be gone?
East End was once a happy town, where harmony and love was busting out at all the seams and in the trees above. The doves of peace were laying eggs, there were no signs of strife, for each man loved his neighbor and sometimes his neighbor's wife. But a sudden change soon come about, storm clouds were in the sky, nobody stopped to kiss a body coming through the rye. For each man eyed his neighbor with malice and with hate. Housewives no longer spilled the beans across the garden gate. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. It was sewer pipes versus slop pails. The town was split in two. With profane propaganda, the air was often blue. The sewer and water faction ran a sanitary plank. They said shallow wells and slop pails and toilets always stank. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But those slop pailers were stubborn. They fought with tooth and nail. They said our nitwit council should be languishing in jail. They told how high taxation and plumbers' union fees would throw us in the poorhouse and they'd throw away the keys. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do. But when the vote was counted, the slop pailers met defeat. And then they started tearing up our quiet village street. Now peace and harmony once more replaced the grapes of wrath. So when next you visit East End, just stop in and have a bath. We had a war, a civil war. Folks often asked us what we're fighting for. Well, most of us wanted water mains and sewers and bathtubs too. But the rest of them decided they'd make the slop pails do.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris.
I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or a $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under edict number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, buddy. All right.
Hey, man, I saw your Volkswagen thing from across the street while I was getting a rhubarb smoothie. Oh, yeah, these smoothies are great. They're loaded with important phytochemicals to combat the free radicals floating around in your body, causing you to make bad decisions, like buying that Volkswagen thing.